Hey everybody, I'm your host Andrew, and I really appreciate all of the support so many of you have shown this podcast since the beginning. If you're enjoying it, please consider subscribing and writing a review. Also, follow All Things Education on Facebook and Twitter, and consider sharing this podcast with others who might enjoy it. I'm having a blast talking to amazing educators, and I hope you're having just as much fun listening. Thanks again, and enjoy this episode. Super thankful that you're here. I have a funny story that I have to tell you that happened today, and it made me think of you just because I thought, wow, this is so difficult for me. And then I thought, man, I'm about to talk to a guy that goes through every day and is probably going through a lot more difficult situations than I am. So what happened today, I see three blocks of students. So I see three things happen. There are three lessons that I do the same lesson three times.
Yeah.
And block one and block two went fine. Then I had lunch, had my planning period. Everything was great. Block three comes around, and I go to turn on my projector, and it doesn't turn on.
Oh, no.
I immediately think it's a projector issue. So I'm calling the tech department. I'm trying to get them down there. There's, like, nobody available at the time. So I'm like, okay, I'll just have to go without my projector, right? So I start the lesson, and I'm going, and all of a sudden kid's like, hey, your pencil sharpener is not working. I'm like, what? And then all of a sudden I realize, like, my computer's not charging, and I'm like, wait a second. So literally all of the power outlets in my classroom were not working.
Oh man.
So I had this huge, like, oh no moment where you have to go, like, okay, everything's going wrong. 'Cause now, even though I can't show what I want to show on my projector,
right,
so I can't do that, I can't use my smart board, but even the paper pencil stuff that I want my students to do, they can't sharpen a pencil.
Right.
And I don't have any sharp pencils just laying around.
Right, right.
So I was like, oh my gosh. And I'm sitting there going, this is like the worst thing in the world. Like, what am I going to do? And then after I calmed down and after things went through, I was like, man, Zach is probably going, that is nothing.
No, man. You know what? It is amazing. It's the littlest things that can throw you off. And I mean, that's a huge thing. My mind immediately went to using a scissors. And if you hold a scissors out, you can use the blade edge to sharpen pencils. And yeah, you got to kind of use like a little bit of a pen knife. And it amazes kids every time I do it. But yeah, that was for about 6 months without using a pencil sharpener. So
really,
yeah. And my classroom doesn't have heat still. It's been about 6 years since I've been in there, and so we were told by the principal, yeah, sure, bring in space heaters. Well, the problem is our school's so old that kind of your same problem, every time you put two space heaters in, even if it's two different sockets from across the room, it shorts out the building.
Yeah.
And of course I'd learned that like three times, and then we learned where the breaker switch is, so now we just pop over and pop the switch and get right back to teaching. So
just get right back to it.
It's like the kids now offer, they're like, Mr., can I go? And it's like, no, you, A, you shouldn't know where the breakers are in the hallway, and B, no, I'll do it. So,
right.
But no, you know what though? Those are all, you know, that's
right.
Would probably throw me into a little bit of a tailspin at first. So
yeah, just 'cause, like, you know, you have to, your whole lesson is upended and you have to kind of restart and go, all right, well, and I literally said to the students, all right, I'm kind of, you know, flying by the seat of my pants here, everybody, so get ready, because this day is going to be something.
That's great, though, that you're honest. I'm so afraid to, when I first started off, I was so afraid to, like, show fear. Like, I always wanted to pretend that I had a plan, and like, all right, and when I would panic.
This was all part of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, my voice would, like, all right, so we're going to now do a discussion and, you know, let's apply this to your life somehow and, you know, just do some quick thinking and, all right, conversation, go, you know, and go right from there. So.
Right, right. Oh, man. Well, I should probably introduce you before we get too much further into this. I'm here with Zach Duncan, who is an incredible educator and a really great guy. And I have to say that because you are taking, this is round two of our attempt at at this podcast, and you are taking more time out of your life, your very busy life with a little kid and a wife and a job and all that stuff. So thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
No, thanks for inviting me. And, you know, really appreciate, I don't think that there's enough perspective from the educator side and potential administrator side. I think we, are kind of in the day and age where the hot stories, kind of make the headlines, and you either hear about I think the most recent story I heard was a teacher and some kind of a physical altercation and ended up petting another student, and now there's this GoFundMe, and so I think it's great to kind of provide another perspective and another really a narrative to education instead of all the hot topics. So, I appreciate for what you're trying to do and what you are doing, I should say. And
Yeah, thank you.
just really getting a good word out.
Yeah, what I really like about doing this is just having those real life conversations about what's actually going on in the classroom. I think that teachers are the experts, and a lot of times we hear from experts that are in the more research based realm where they haven't necessarily been in a classroom in a while. And I can tell you that from experience that if one kid sneezes in my classroom, it is a complete distraction, and my lesson is just as upended as if all of the power went out in the classroom. So,
Well, it's funny you actually brought that up. Me and my colleagues, I'm also part of a professional learning community through Voxer. And there was an author that came in, or a researcher, in the first couple days of school, and they kind of like shared their experiences. And I kind of brought up the question. I said, "How many years do you have to exist outside the classroom to still be relevant?
That's such a good question.
Is there like a 5-year mark or 10-year?" And it's difficult, and I probably sound a little judgmental, like, "Oh, well, I'm in the trenches, and this is what life's really like," but. It's a question that sometimes comes up.
No, it's a really good question, yeah. Because I, one of the things that I saw some of my professors doing, I'm still kind of connected with them, and these professors have been in the college setting for years, and they're actually taking an entire semester off from teaching the college courses and are visiting classrooms because they
Oh,
felt
wow.
like they are being they're too far removed.
Yeah.
So they're actually saying, you know what? And the college is letting them do this because the college believes in it.
Oh, that's
That,
amazing.
the
That's amazing.
university said, take the time off, and go visit classrooms. So that's what they're doing. And I think that was really good of them to say, hey, I feel like I'm not connected anymore.
Oh, yeah. Especially like when I think back to my college classes, there was a couple that stood out. But I just remember we were one time learning about differentiation within classrooms and, how to shuffle up your learning and, do this. And yet we were all being taught in a lecture style setting. And it just kind of cracked me up. And it was like, this is the biggest ironic, example that I could find that, they're saying you have to break it up and you have to make it exciting. And I'm thinking, this is
This is
not
the exact opposite.
exactly. So that's awesome that you're that the professors are getting out and getting real world.
I think so. The other thing I think is interesting, that you mentioned that is sometimes at professional development, I feel the same way. That the professional development is about being energized and you're hearing from a monotone voice. And I think, oh boy, this is going to be a long day.
Yeah, I mean, I think professional development is it's either greeted with excitement or with chagrin. I think it's you're kind of on either side of that fence. I think it too depends a lot on the leadership of the district and your administrators. And I have my master's degree, I have my principalship certification, and so I'm trying to think about professional development in a different light. I've led a couple professional developments, that's been interesting. And it kind of gives me maybe a little bit more of a critical role maybe in some of this professional development. And my biggest kind of question is it supporting the initiatives of the district, and is it really supporting the initiatives of the building? And sometimes you have amazing professional development that really speaks to you, and other times it just kind of sounds like, well, we got 2 hours to burn, and let's just talk about something, random. So I think it's, really important to make sure that, there's good leadership and those initiatives are really spelled out.
I think that's so important. I like how you say that. Is it supporting those initiatives? I also sometimes question because I also you and I are very similar. I also have my principal certification with my master's in educational leadership, and have also been able to run some PD. And one of the things I think of too is how can a teacher walk away from this PD and utilize something today or tomorrow, whatever, in their classrooms, you know, immediately to support and better students? What is the takeaway I want these teachers to get out of this PD? Sometimes I think that's lost a little bit, in the, you know, or I should say the, what do I want to say here? What's the word? The, applicability. Mm-hmm. Is that a word?
Yeah. Yeah.
the ability to take something and apply it immediately. Mm-hmm. I feel like sometimes that is
like
lacking.
Relevant. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Is it relevant?
And you know what? That's kind of funny. We went to a training earlier this year and, we just kind of got this random email and it said, oh, hey, by the way, you're going to attend this at a certain date and, you're going to cover this new program. And no one in my school had heard this program. And it was the most, it was a very, very random training, where just very shuffled. We arrived there and no one was given usernames or passwords. And so it all needed to be like redistributed. And at one point someone said, well, you know, you're kind of explaining, you know, how we should be working with this program, but what mm-hmm. is the purpose of this program and why should we do this in a relatively respectful way?
Yeah, sure.
And the trainer had a very hard time explaining that. And so as soon as that wow. occurred, it was, I wouldn't say that they lost the room, but they lost a good chunk.
Well, sure. It's all downhill from
exactly,
there.
You know? Exactly. So
Like you said, it has to be relevant. And if there's not a reason why a teacher has to take the time to learn a new system, then it's not worth
right.
it.
Right. And in Reading, so I've been teaching in Reading for the past 10 years. And
yeah, we should probably
I was trying to lead us back into that and not talk about me. but, you know, it's kind of funny, though, because after 10 years, we've had, I believe, 6 or 7 superintendents. We've had mm-hmm. Scores and complete turnarounds and audits and all sorts of crazy things that have happened where people have been moved from positions because they don't have the credentials and all sorts of mm-hmm. crazy things. But one of the challenges has been to try to find those initiatives that can be supported. And it's really difficult to kind of know the commitment the district has, the administration has, teachers have to some of these initiatives, especially when you hear, oh, it's not going to go away. That's usually the first right. sound of the death knell, like, oh no, we weren't even thinking about that until you really, you know, brought that up. So for me, these past 10 years, a lot of it has been about adaptability to the different positions that, you know, they've kind of said, hey, we have an opening this year. Are you open to it? And, oh, sure. You know, let's try it out. And so I really like found myself getting into education, though. I had a very interesting experience attending Downingtown. I mm-hmm. originally moved from Coatesville, which is an urban education center, and I switched over in about fourth grade, and man, I was completely caught in the dust. I was put in the highest classes because I left Coatesville pretty well accomplished. I had a lot of good family support.
Yeah.
And my mom was on top of me, making sure I got the homework, et cetera. And I got to Downingtown thinking, okay, I got this. And oh my gosh, I was super lost. I was frustrated. I just was not. And I was kind of looked at by a lot of kids like, you can't do these things that we can do. And so, right. like, school for me was always difficult. I had a hard time making friends at first. And school's sure. just always a challenge. And so for me, though, what really I think was the worst class was social studies, which is what I'm teaching now. And the problem was I never saw any of the relevance to my own life. And I saw it as like this dull subject that it was full of gotchas sure. and, you know this date. Why? Well, just, you should know it. Oh, okay.
Right. It's important.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that kind of changed. I luckily had some very, very good teachers that, were just incredible that really made me think, oh, wow, this could be a pretty cool subject if you brought an energy and a light. And really what kind of connected all to me was I became a Civil War reenactor when I was about 17 years old. And that kind of made me realize, oh my gosh, this is a living, breathing thing that people experienced. And that, you know, it's also a way really to ultimately connect to people. And so that was the way that
really cool.
drew me in.
Yeah, that's really cool. I hope you don't mind me asking maybe a personal question.
Yeah.
You know, you said when you moved schools, it was kind of hard for you to kind of make friends, and you struggled academically at first in those new classes and in the new school. How have you taken that experience and applied it to your teaching?
Yeah. Actually, that's a great question. I'm not thinking about that till now. I think my biggest struggle was coming into what felt like a different culture. I remember leaving Coatesville, and it was probably a third white, a third black, a third Latino. And I came to Downingtown really not knowing anything about, like, things you shouldn't say. You know,
right,
or
right,
and like I
right.
remember, like, I was trying to explain this. The girl next to me, I think she had a pencil, and I said, "Oh, this colored girl." And like in Coatesville, it was kind of like not a batted eye. And oh my gosh, in Downingtown, it was like principal, like I got a referral. Like, and I was like, but really, though, like it kind of woke me up this transition to, you know, growing up, we were pretty lower middle class. My dad was a mailman, my mom stayed home. But I wasn't really aware of a lot of the things I didn't have. You know, we never had cable. We had one TV, you know, not a big deal. And I wore hand-me-downs and whatever my mom could find on the cheap.
Right, right.
And coming to Downingtown, it was like, whoa, you are in like this rich area. And it's all about the brands and the fact that I couldn't afford that, or, you know, just kind of made me a little bit further outcast. So the way that, you know, I've tried really hard not to lose that feeling of like the outcast, and in part my humor is I like to be funny, but I really like to do a lot of puns, and I like to be ridiculous for the kids. And it's obvious to the point of, you know, I'll sometimes like take off my glasses and kind of wink at them, or
I might do
the same pun like, you know, twice a week, or, you know, something, you know, heaven forbid you ever talk about like milk, and then it's, oh, that's dairy funny, and I'll find an utter joke, and holy cow, that was bad. You know, that whole thing, like the tail end, and I'll just keep going.
Sure.
But in a way, I can be ridiculous so that every kid can kind of join in and not quite mocking me, but, you know, kind of sitting back and saying, wow, you know, there's a little bit of ridiculousness to it. And there's also a line there of expectations, but
absolutely.
That kind of has allowed everyone to feel included and kind of laugh at the teacher. Yeah.
Yeah. And kind of be able to build that relationship with you. And I think your past experiences in your own life allow you to know what it is that those types of students in an urban ed setting kind of need. You know, they need that person that they can be ridiculous with, or maybe kind of laugh at. Mm-hmm. You know, at times, someone that is kind of doing it for their benefit.
Yeah.
And they can probably see that. I think that's really awesome that you kind of have that prior knowledge from your own life to be able to translate that into being an educator of students in the urban district.
Yeah.
So you know, to kind of clarify, you are a teacher in an urban setting.
Oh, yeah.
What do you currently teach? You said social studies. What grade levels are you currently working with?
I am lucky enough to teach 7th grade. In the past, I was, for the first couple of years, I was hired as a long-term, substitute teacher is probably the best word. So the first 2 years, or 3 years, I actually went to whatever they needed me to do. They said, you know, you're great. You have great energy. However, you know, there's always a question of money in Reading, being urban ed.
Yep.
And there was a couple of years where the budget crunches, they had to do like layoffs, and then they called people back. And so I remember my first experience was teaching 9th through 12th grade emotional support. And I guess the teacher had just gotten so frustrated that they like left everything. They left their like keys to their car. I guess they had an extra set in there. They're pictures of their family and just walked out one day. And so that's
it.
And so I went in there as a daily sub. And by the end of the week, you know, it seemed to fit. I was writing lesson plans, and they offered me a position there. And from there, it was teaching remedial computers. It was teaching emotional support, inclusive classroom for 9th through 12th. That was the kids that kind of got out of jail. And I've kind of found myself now in 7th grade, and you know, it's been a crazy journey, but I think one of the things that I've always tried to hold on to is that everyone has like a story to tell, and that everyone has value. And I know it's so easy to kind of look at the student in the classroom and say, man, you are a piece of work. I am dedicating 70% of my effort to 10% of the kids. And, you know, but you kind of have to be persistent and consistent. And that's for at least in urban ed, and I think probably education in general. So many students don't see the consistency, whether it's at home or their own friendships or their own lives.
Right.
And the best thing a teacher can be is just positive and consistent and just kind of saying like, hey, I know you can do this stuff. I know you don't think you can, but I've been to college and I've seen a lot of the world that you haven't. So you got to trust me on this. And I have your best interests at heart.
And I love that you know, the quote there that everyone has value. I almost feel like we should say that to the students more than probably we do.
Right.
Telling them that, hey, you have a value in this classroom, you have a value in the school, and you have a value in this community.
Right.
You know, it's really up to them to find what that value is.
Right. It's not always useful, but there's definitely a value. And we have to kind of find your use. We have to find what connects you and what plugs you into. Like, what do you honestly care about?
Right.
For me, like, the dirty words of the classroom are, I don't care, or, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know. You know, you have to kind of insert yourself, put your own personality flair into it,
right.
You know, so that you have some, there's some relevance for you there.
Right. One of my favorite things that I learned in, ironically, a professional development somewhere along the line, we were talking about that earlier, but one of the things I learned was to use the phrase, when students are turning in work, you just look at them and say, are you proud of this? And it just makes them go, wait a second, you know,
yeah.
And then I teach sixth grade, so I have to kind of teach my kids, what is that, when I say that to you, what does that mean? What am I actually asking you? So I always say, like, is your name on it? Is your handwriting neat? You know, did you spell words correctly that you know you should be able to spell? Are there capital letters where there should be? Are there lowercase letters where there should be? Is there punctuation? All of those, like, little basic things, I teach them that, you know, when I ask, hey, are you proud of this? Think about, did I think about all those easy things that I should do, or was I just going through this really quickly and just want to get it over with?
Right. And I mean, I think in a way you're also teaching them intrinsically, just as you said, like, not just pride, but also value, that, you know, mm-hmm. what they are making is important. And
yeah.
even though they are in a classroom of 25, you know, each person has a role to play and each person
Absolutely.
Has a different perspective to add. So I think that's really yeah. awesome that you're doing that and saying that to them.
Yeah. So you're in this urban setting, and I think it's so interesting because I've had only one real true experience when I was in college. I guess you call it a student teacher. It wasn't the full blown student teaching experience, but it was a placement in an urban school in downtown Lancaster City in Pennsylvania, and I was teaching in a English as a second language classroom. It was part of a special ed placement. And so I've only ever had that one experience, and it was pretty short, but it was really, really eye-opening. And you've been there for, what did you say, 10 years now?
Yep.
And so what challenges do you see because you're in an urban setting, you know, that maybe I don't in my kind of rural setting that I teach in?
Yeah. You know what? I think that we see a lot of the general same problems. You know, you have a lot of students that I think are kind of growing up and are going through all sorts of, you know, friend and social issues. But in Reading, what I see a lot more of is just, I think, a lack of, how do we blend this? I think the question in Reading is, do you play the game or not?
Mm-hmm.
And I think because it's such an interesting cultural phenomena where you are having 75% of students are Latino, 20% are Black, and 5% are White, Asian, etc. But ironically, every single teacher, just about, I want to say, it has to be 75% at least, are White. And so in class, if you're good and quiet, you're acting white, or you're acting like them.
Yeah.
And that's something that we've been trying to build, is the idea that, you know, it's not this, it's the fact that, you know, this is kind of what the real world expects. And when I tell them stories about, you know, my middle school, when I went to, and there were 8 Black kids out of a class of, you know, 750 White kids,
yeah.
they just can't comprehend that. And
right,
I said, well, guys,
right.
this is the reality. Once you sometimes leave these urban, once you leave Reading, there's a lot of White people out there, and they
right.
can't even believe it. And so to try to do that, what I've worked really hard at doing is trying to find, you know, role models and really talking about like what are values that we should respect about people. Mm-hmm. And it's not the focus on the color. It's a lot of it's the accomplishments. And it's so easy to go to the NBA or these sports stars. And I was finding myself kind of falling into that trap. Reading's latest hero is Lonnie Walker, mm-hmm. who is an amazing basketball player.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. But, you know, we talk about with students, I talk about, you know, what are the odds of Lonnie Walker? He was the best person in not only his middle school, but all four middle schools that we have. He's the best student in the high school. He was the best student out of, you know, Berks County, arguably, you know, and right. we kind of went through that. And I said, you know, you could be amazing, but a lot of it is luck mm-hmm. and hard work. And right. I said, you're kind of like buying a lottery ticket when instead you could be going maybe to a job interview and, you know, and you kind of building yourself up to that. And I also said, you have to look at how hard Lonnie worked to get to that point. And sure. I said, it's not just you show up on a basketball court, throw some baskets in your, and you get $6 million. So I think it is trying to communicate this cultural, and maybe not culture, but at least my family background, the expectation was every single one of you will go to college. It's not even a question. And kind of communicating that with the students and saying, you know, guys, I can talk to you about, you know, what society thinks you should do, but this is what's worked for me. And it is about what can you do to find a job that brings you happiness, that you feel good about at the end of the day. And that is everyone's goal. You don't need to go to college. You don't need to go to trade school. You know, as long as you're happy, that's what's important.
Right.
And so trying to go back to like that culture thing, for a lot of these students, many of them come from single parent households. Mm-hmm. Many of them don't really know their own value as far as what they can bring eventually. So I've kind of just said, you know, hey, like already I know that some of you guys have these great skills that you would do great in college, or, you know, you could use your personality and do this and this and this. And I think part of it is just, again, providing that consistent support to say, hey, you know, you're building these skills that one day you can kind of build up all this stuff and then just surge out into the world. Don't just slink out and just barely graduate. Like right. have a plan, have an idea.
Right. And I think allowing them to be able to embrace their culture and their mm-hmm. beliefs and their values, and yet still understand what is socially acceptable.
Right.
Right. You know, what kind of social lessons do they still need to be taught? I think that's really important. But still allowing them to have that, you know, grip on who they are too.
Yeah, and I've really had to reach into the kind of like the real world mm-hmm. because
yeah, absolutely. You've got to bring it again, make it relevant for them. Just like yep. you know, administrators have to make professional development relevant for us as teachers. We have to make that relevant for them.
Definitely, definitely. And it's so interesting because like we're in this age where there is this hyper exposure to everything. And we were kind of sharing earlier about, you know, like the education. And I'm happy that, you know, there's another voice that's getting out these stories and messages. But, you know, for so many students, they're so hypersensitive to everything. The first call that is usually racism. So, for instance, today I was sharing, you know, a story about the Bushmen in Africa and how there are these nomadic people. And I said, oh, you know, they're from Africa and they are black. And one kid said, oh, that's racist, mister. And I said, okay, like, you know, every time you say racist, I'm going to teach you a short little lesson about what racism is.
Yeah,
and
right,
I've now
right.
boiled it down to like 30 seconds. And it's yeah. basically saying,
heard it now,
if you
I'm
are
sure
saying,
a lot.
Yeah, yeah, if you're saying something negative about a group of people because of their skin color, yes, that's racism. But just because you say you're describing someone, that's not racist. Oh, okay. Right. And I said, plus, if I was racist, I would not be teaching in Reading right now, and I wouldn't be teaching, period. But, you know, it is good to try and use that energy to try to teach. So all of that, it's just, again, trying to teach, again, a set of values that the school has, but not necessarily are reinforced at home. And that's mm-hmm. not for every single student, you know, and you have those challenges too in your district. But it's also trying to kind of to say to a lot of these students, hey, you know, this is the values that I have had, and I think you should kind of build these values, and this will help you out, you know, in life. And they're not always shared at home. So you have to kind of provide a reason why.
I definitely think that, you know, going back to the question of what challenges do you face, I think mm-hmm. cultural challenges have to be the pinnacle of that. How do you see those challenges and those factors, the cultural, the socioeconomic, those factors, how do they come into play in your classroom? You know, how, you know, what's the actual, you know, how does that actually show up in the room?
Yeah. It's actually interesting.
Does it? Maybe it doesn't. Maybe.
Oh, no, it does. well, and you know, I mean, middle school, the best thing about middle school, and this is what I love, is they can love and hate everything often at the same time, right? Including you. Like, Mr. Duncan, you were cool yesterday. Oh, thanks, but you're whack today. Oh, yeah, right. Okay, thank you. You know, like, literally nothing has changed. I might have worn a different tie or something. But,
right.
yeah, you know what? The cool thing is, at least what I really enjoy, is that from my experience in Downingtown, people would call you out if you wore, you know, if you didn't have the right shirt or you didn't do that. In Reading, it is like that. The big thing is shoes, and your shoe game is like a huge deal. And what's kind of fun for me, at least, is kind of flipping it a little bit. And, you know, they love, one of my hot topics is just talking about like rappers and money.
Yep.
And like trying to kind of puncture that and saying, you know, guys, all those videos of the rappers, you know, that's like not real money. And you know, all the cars are rented and you know, it's jewelry. And I'm saying they're not, you know, I'm not saying they're not rich, but they're trying to sell you this idea or this image. But as far as though, like the conflicts that come up with, you know, cultural, socioeconomic, everyone's poor in Reading. And that's kind of what I state, and not in a brutal way, but I say, guys, the facts are 95% of us in Reading in this school qualify for free or reduced lunch. And I said, and we have grants that pay the rest of it. So I said, so that kind of means we're all in the same boat. And that's not meaning anything's bad. It's just the reality. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make you any less than another person that's rich or poor, you know, but these are kind of like the facts. And also when it comes to the language barrier, that can be a little challenging. I know you mentioned that you worked in an Ella classroom. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm lucky enough where in my homeroom, I have half the students have individual educational plans, IEPs, special ed. And then the other half are Ella. So they are English language acquisition learners. And I kind of have the group that is the last stage of the Ellas. They are about to join the mainstream. Right, so I am super lucky right there to have a great blend of students that, you know, learn a little differently than a lot of people, whether it's a language barrier, whether it's anything. So I really try to turn the challenges into fodder for my classroom. Mm-hmm. So if there's a couple minutes of time, we talk about, again, anything related to money, we talk about values. And just because you spend lots of money, what do you value? Is that what we should value? So a hot topic button I love to bring up is goodwill. And like, well, is it wrong? You know, if you're buying these Gucci belts, which are the popular rage in Reading, you're spending like $300. Now, that's cool. Like, me as a teacher, I could afford that, but instead, I don't. Why not? So, you know, I think the way that I handle all these challenges is that if it's brought up in a respectful light, this can lead to amazing understanding and great discussion in the classroom. But you also kind of have to have that expectation that, yeah, we're willing to talk about everything as long as you're respectful. And so what's interesting this year is that I have a transgender student in my classroom.
Okay.
And I first got the student and I said, what is going on? And I have no idea how to refer to this student. I don't know. Do I insert myself into this kid's life as far as like, do you know what bathroom you're going to? Like, and so I needed help with this. And so I went down and talked to the nurse and she helped us out. I'm part of the SAP team for our school. And so I did some research with that. And we luckily, and I made sure it was okay with the student. And I said, hey, if this comes up in class, are you okay if we discuss this? And she said, you know what? Yeah, I think I'm ready for it. And I said, if you don't, you know, do this secret hand motion, like tap your ear and we won't, and we're good. Or we could abandon, I can change topics. And the student said, no, that's fine. You know, the more students know. And it was a great experience because it was great. The kids are trying so hard to be like respectful. They're like, I don't mean to be racist. And I'm like, well, it's not race. And they're like, okay, well, I don't want to be a jerk. And I'm like, that's fine.
Right.
You know, and we hear the ground rules, you know, if we break these, we can't. And so I think you can't shy away from a lot of those things.
Right.
I try really hard with my students not to give my own opinion. I try to provide, you know, both sides. And, you know, that's kind of what's worked for me. So it's taking those challenges, whether it's socioeconomic, cultural, diversity, and I like to flip the questions around on them. Mm-hmm. You know, like, what's the reality? How do you think it really should be?
And I think that's so interesting that you do that, because that leads then into you're building a little mini community right there in your classroom, and you're showing them by modeling what it looks like to be accepting of all different backgrounds and all different people and all different way of lives and all of that stuff. And you're showing that in a small scale, which then they can relate that to the larger scale of their actual community, right, in the city or wherever they live or in the world in general.
That's actually the first thing I talk to them. I bring them into the classroom, one of the first days of school. Mm-hmm. And I said to them, you know, guys, I said, I know you've probably had teachers in the past that, you know, kind of maybe have really high expectations. And I said, and unfortunately for me, I have extremely high expectations for you, probably higher than all the other ones because you're older now. But I said, the way I kind of see us, though, is that we're all kind of out in this lifeboat in the middle of the ocean. And I said, we can all do things to help us survive, help each other out. And I said, but you have to know, though, that I'm not going to jettison any of you. We don't give up on each other. Just because someone acts out, throws a desk, whatever, you're still part of this community. And guess what? Right. You have bad days. I have bad days. But each of you has something to share. And I'm excited. I said, I've chosen each and every one of you to be part of this class. And it's been great. But what's been a little bit of a challenge is that because I'm building these relationships with these kids, I'm kind of being approached by other teachers and saying, hey, something's different about your class than other classes. Mm-hmm. You're taking some of the albeit the toughest kids, and this sounds a little arrogant, but hear me out, and you're taking these kids and you're making them feel connected and belonged to the rest, right, of the school and really to themselves. And I am quick to point out, I say, no, it's not me at all. It's the willingness of the students to really work together. And maybe I'm prodding that along, but
sure, facilitating that a little bit.
Exactly. And so, of course, now I have, I originally had about 25, 24 students, and one of them was moved out of my class, and instead five more were placed in my class, five of our toughest challenges. And now it's tough because there's transition, which is not the best.
Right, right.
And while I'm welcoming a lot of students, you're now starting to have, like, challenges that are forming. Where,
sure,
we have three of these students are from another school and have some pretty interesting reputations. But again, it goes back to just the consistency. And the hope is that, you know, when they're out of your sight, when they're with other students, they're kind of saying, hey, we are part of this collective body. And I tell them, I say, guys, like, if you do things outside of my room, you know, I'm going to take it personally because you are my legacy in a way. Like, when you leave here,
yeah,
you had Mr. Duncan, and I care about you guys so much. I lose sleep when I think about how can I connect this lesson with you? Or if you tell me about your day, I think about that when I drive home and I hold my own son. So I say, you know, like, you guys are important to me, and this is a lot more beyond the classroom. And so I think, again, yeah, you're right. It's facilitating and also giving them the freedom and the ability to be able to solve their own problems and to give them that confidence that, you know,
yeah,
we're part of this, we're all together, and this should give you power to kind of go out and feel supported by everyone in here. So it's been a great challenge, but it's been a great experience until you kind of have to also be aware of saying, okay, like, I now have 28 kids. There's a discussion, yeah, about adding two more. And every teacher's probably worst nightmare is like, okay, a kid shows up on your classroom without a phone call saying, I'm part of your class now. And you're like,
right, right, right.
Well, we did not talk about this, but okay. So
come on in.
For me, it's trying to learn my limits as a teacher and as a facilitator, yeah, and saying, okay.
Enough's enough, right?
Enough's enough for now.
Yeah, right.
Let me breathe.
Right, right.
You know, let me breathe. Let me get everyone focused and connected.
As soon as you get a new group into that community, they have to then learn the social norms of that community,
exactly,
of your classroom. You know, they and I always kind of enjoy when I get a new student. Again, I'll say one new student, you know, say halfway through the year or something, because
yeah,
I 100% put it on the kids that have been there since the beginning and say, oh, this is your job to get these, to get this new student acclimated to our room.
Right.
It's your job to figure out what do they need to know? What don't they need to know? You know, how does this operate? Help them through it, guide them through it. Tell them who I am, tell them what I'm all about, tell them what we're all about in this classroom. And I put that right back on the students because I think that's really important. The one thing that you mentioned that I think is very interesting, and I'd like to kind of come back to it because you said it so perfectly that I feel like it's worth mentioning again. You said that you say to your students, you are my legacy. And I think that is so interesting to say because it goes a little selfish, right? I mean, it's saying like, hey, you're representing me. You better be good because I want a good reputation. But it also tells the students, hey, guys, we're in this together. You are my legacy. I'm going to help you through all of this. We're all here together for this. But I want you to know that if you make a decision outside of my classroom, if you are acting or behaving poorly somewhere else outside of the school in the community, it's not just a reflection on you. It's a reflection on me, and it's a reflection on everybody else that's in this community.
Well, you know what? I now that I think about it, what really makes me say that is because so many of these urban ed kids, and maybe students in general, maybe you see this, but they need more to connect them to school.
They need a purpose.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. and in Reading, we fail that, I think, a lot. Mm-hmm. Because our expectations don't always follow through with our passion. And we care for the students, but we sometimes think caring for the students is passing them along and until they're not prepared. And so because of that, if a student isn't tied directly to school, there's a reason why our ninth grade class is around 2,500, I believe, and mm-hmm. why our graduating class is around 650. Wow. I mean, we lose almost three quarters of our kids between ninth and 12th grade due to various reasons, whether it's pregnancy or violence or just simply tired of school. So, you know, me trying to say that it's to say, guys, like, this is not just a school. This is not just a class. It's, this is part of so much more. This is your life.
It's bigger than just you.
And one thing I too say, sorry, I know I'm, you know, blabbing a lot, is the first day of school, and I kind of repeat this, whenever I hear, oh, mister, are we doing anything today? It's like, yeah, we are. And I share with the students, I say, guys, like, I only have 180 days with you. Mm-hmm. And this is the only time in our lives we're going to probably be together. And I said, I'm probably going to see some of you guys more than your parents. I see some of my students 2.5 hours every day.
Yep.
I said, I'm going to tell you about my life. I'm going to learn about yours. And I say, you know, I don't want to waste a single minute of it. So, you know, no, you're not going to have free time on the computers. No, you're not going to do this. You know, you were invested now, and your parents pay me a good chunk of money to do this. Right. I honestly care. If you want to do nothing, go home and play Fortnite until your like eyes burn out. But while we're here, we're going to try to, you know, be the best people we can be and, you know, kind of go from there.
Right. Right. And that, like I said, and that saying, you're my legacy is just solidifying that this is important to me and I want it to be important to you. And, you know, again, not that you're certainly not going to not give them support in that. We know that they're students. We know that they are going to make mistakes and not know the correct path every time.
Yep.
But just kind of that confirmation that they are really important. They have a value, as you said earlier, and that it's beyond just them. I think that's so critical.
And I think you brought up a good point that we have to remind ourselves as educators is that, they're still kids. Mm-hmm. They're still 11, 12 years old. They care more about their friends than they do you sometimes.
Or their shoes.
I have a poster that says, don't be sorry, be careful. It shows a kid like stepping on another kid's toe. Mm-hmm. Me trying to be relevant and probably not doing so well. But, you know, I had a student who was really upset the other day. And he just was not having a good day. And I said, yo, man, why don't you go out, get a drink, take a loop, come back.
Mm-hmm.
Came back. Was kind of fuming. I said, hey, like, you need to, you know, let's relax a little bit. Let's breathe. You know, we're all here. And he just kind of let loose. He flipped out, cursed me out. I said, hey, this is not normally like you. And he said, well, you know what? you can go F yourself. And I was like, okay. I'm like, okay. Again, I hear what you're saying. I don't agree. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's it. If you don't get under control, I want you here, but you're not going to be here. And he picked up the desk and he, like, threw it. He didn't throw it at me. He threw it at the wall. He smashed it to the wall. And he said, F you, F this, F everyone. And just, and it was great because, not, I mean, that wasn't great.
I know what you mean.
But usually, and in my classes that don't care about each other, they kind of laugh and giggle and poke and try to get this kid more amped up. You know, whoever it is, you're the weak, you're the target. And it was like bizarre. Everyone just kind of ignored him. Everyone just kept working on their project. And he walked out and everyone looked at me like, oh. And I said, yeah. I said, everyone has bad days. I said, and you know what? And we're all human. And I said, and I'll talk with him, but you know what? He's part of this classroom. We welcome him back. There'll be consequences, but guess what? We're all human. And what was cool about that was that the word got back to him. When he left out, I had to do a referral, you know, the discipline thing. But word got back to him. I was like, yo, it's okay. Mr. Duncan knows that you had a bad day. He tried to help. He kind of spit in his face a little bit, but it's okay. And right. So I think that's another lesson that we kind of have to remind ourselves, you know, whether we're in, you know, a suburban school, in an urban ed, rural school, like kids kind of have to know there's a way back into like being in the graces of, you know, the classroom.
Right. We have to remind ourselves that they're going to make mistakes. We want them to do everything perfectly, but they're not going to. Yep. And we have to be okay with them, like you said, coming back and trying again. Right. It reminded me of a student I had recently who struggles a lot with his behavior and has some behavior management things in his individualized education plan, his IEP. And we had a day where he was being very disrespectful to me and kind of playing a power struggle game. And I think a lot like you. When that happens, I'm very calm. I don't yell. I don't raise my voice. And I just give options. Hey, man, here are your choices right now. You can either do this. You can leave my room. You can go to the other room. You can go to the office. You can go here. You can do your work, or you can just sit here quietly. But our argument is not going to continue. Those are your choices, man. And he was still being very defiant, very disrespectful. And at one point, another student in the room looked at him and was like, dude, what's your problem? Like another student kind of took over and was like, hey, man, what's your deal? Like, Mr. Stein's being cool. What are you doing? You know? And it was really interesting how that kind of that dynamic happened. And eventually the student did choose to leave the room because he didn't want to be there anymore. And so he did leave. And I just looked around. I said, guys, I just want to make sure that I'm on this, that we're all on the same page. You know, did I do anything or say anything that I shouldn't have? And all like, no, you were fine. I'm like, okay. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't, you know, blinded by, you know, my kind of anger or any kind of feelings I was having. And I didn't do anything wrong. And I said, I'm really sorry that took away so much time from you guys. And like, no, Mr. Stein, you know, it's okay. You've got to do that. And one kid said, I would have lost my cool a long time ago. And it was
yeah. Really, honestly, goes back to, you know, kind of you and the regard you have for your students. And to me, one of the bravest things a kid can ever do is really to stand up to one of his peers in class, surrounded by his buddies, and saying, like, yo, dude, like, this is, you're out of line, man.
Right. Especially, supporting the teacher in front of your peers is a tough thing to do for a sixth or seventh grader.
And then trying to, what's difficult for me is kind of appreciating them, but not making them look like a kiss up. And so like when that happens, it's like, hey, you know what? Like Brandon, I appreciate what you're doing because you know what, guys, you really have his best thoughts in your head right now. Like you're kind of watching out for him, trying to help him. And you know what? That's a good buddy. And I really appreciate it. That's what a good friend should do. And all right, let's move on. Boom. It's done. All right, let's get into this, you know, and then like, okay, discussion, you know, exit, moving on type thing. So
yep.
That's great. So, I mean, that's kind of how I manage the relationships, though, you know, in these environments. It's, you know, trying to build a rapport with not only each student, but also a class in general. Yeah. There are times when I've gone on, I wouldn't want to say a rampage, but it's like, oh, 7 of you are late or 10 of you are late. What is going on? Da, 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 right. da. And then trying to read the classroom and, you know, there's nothing scarier than kind of noticing like the tide of the classroom is starting to roll against you, and you're like, ooh, okay, let's backpedal, backpedal, okay,
sorry,
let's
everyone.
Discuss this. Yeah, and one thing that is probably really bad for me that I don't do, and I got conflicted, I probably don't ever apologize, and that's
interesting.
Probably bad, but what I take is I take the momentum, even if it's negative momentum. And I try to channel it into a different area. So, for example, there were 7 kids late today from gym class to me. And I was like, guys, you are more than 5 minutes late. What is going on? And some of the kids started muttering, oh, this is ridiculous, da-da-da-da-da. And I said, well, okay, stop. Expectations. This is ridiculous. We are waiting on 7 of you to get started. Isn't that kind of ridiculous?
Right.
Kind of meeting like the fire with fire type thing. And you know, I guess just being there long enough is trying to pick and choose your battles, but
sure.
Also being able to read the classroom and, you know, with those tough environments and those relationships, you know, as long as the kids hopefully know that you have their best interests at heart, you know, that they're a little easier to manage and, you know, you can kind of lean on them maybe a little bit more than you would a student you wouldn't have a good relationship with.
Right. I have apologized before in a couple of scenarios, and it's worked out well for me. Because there's been a couple of times where I've yelled pretty loudly, pretty forcefully. And,
yeah.
You know, I think it's funny cause I always say I'm not a very big guy, as far as muscles, I don't have them, you know, I'm not a very intimidating, adult, but to a 6th grader,
oh yeah,
I am the Hulk.
It's
great.
Yeah.
So sometimes I do, you know, I've on occasion yelled or something or been loud and looked scary and mean and kind of scared a student. And then I'll take them off to the side and just say, hey man, I'm really sorry that I yelled because that's never something I want to do. I want you to know that I was very frustrated in this situation and that's why I yelled, but I am sorry for that. And just kind of getting them to understand the why I was frustrated or the reason I yelled, it helps to rebuild that relationship. Just like we talked about before, they need a way to get back in, and I have to be the catalyst for that.
And I think that's right. I think to kind of go back, backtrack a little bit what I said, I think the apologies I don't ever do to a group setting.
Yeah, right.
I think I'm along the lines of you, like if I have to yell or, you know, kind of jump around or do something crazy or use my voice forcibly, I find that my approach to a group is typically pretty staunch and steadfast and, you know, there's room for discussion, but really we're going to go the direction I want.
Right.
And it's individually. That's when, as you said, like the apologies really make an impact and say, hey, you know what? I got intense today. And that's because you kind of weren't taking the redirections I wanted. Moving forward, here's what we're going to do. All right. If you're hurt by this, I apologize, but you know, and I always throw the button there,
I'm sure my wife
really appreciates that, you know, when it's like, oh, but I'm sorry, but you also, you know, so that.
Yeah, I do the classic, like, I statement, like,
exactly.
I felt angry because you did this.
Yeah, because like you, and then it leads into that. and, you know, like, I think the reality, too, is, you know, sometimes in these urban ed centers, you know, we think to ourselves, oh, man, like, so many of these kids have problems that are so tough, and the reality, though, is, I mean, relationships are tough in adult life.
Absolutely.
In whatever environmental life you're in, you know, like.
And whatever kind of school setting you're in, too, relationships are tough.
Exactly. You're still going to have parents that are, you know, make poor decisions that affect the kids. And you sometimes have to figure out, well, what role do I play as the educator, as more? And so, you know, maybe in urban ed, you're going to be exposed to a little bit more of those problems.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've really been frustrated with lately is that there aren't always the resources to meet those problems. For example, we have not had a school counselor for an entire year. And it dropped to my assistant principal to kind of do discipline, counseling, following up on all the different protocols. And, you know, trying to pitch in where I can. But ultimately, it was this one person doing an amazing amount of work, and you know, there's just a lot of stress. So I know at one point in my school we had 2 counselors for 800 kids, and now we're down to 1. And the question is, how do you build relationships? How do you, even your most vulnerable students, how do you try to meet their needs with one person? It's just frustrating. So I think that kind of comes into play as far as what problems are there for urban ed.
The staffing issues sounds like a big issue. And then those staffing issues then cause a ripple effect in mm-hmm. the student issues and that kind of thing. I can see how that could be a problem.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time. Because this is, again, like I said, the second time we've been trying to do this. The first time was a technical issue on my end that caused us to need to
try
this
mutual.
Again, and I do apologize for that. But, you know, I would love to hear your thoughts on a kind of a wrap-up question. I try to wrap up every episode of this podcast with a question to whoever I'm talking to that at that time. Something that... Again, kind of like we talked about at the very beginning about professional development, something that teachers can go back to their classrooms today, tomorrow, whenever they can, and use it right away. So what's something that teachers should remember, think about, or do when they're interacting with students and they come across students who are from different backgrounds, different life experiences, different cultures, different socioeconomic statuses, different diversity, that kind of thing. What are some things that teachers need to remember, given the fact that you've been in this kind of setting for, you know, 10 years plus? I feel like you're kind of an expert in that. So I was hoping that you can give us some advice.
Thank you for the compliment. Gosh, I hope I'm not an expert because I make a lot of mistakes most of the time.
I think that makes you an expert.
Oh, gosh.
A, okay. The fact that you are willing to admit that you make a lot of mistakes, and B, you then take that mistake and you learn from it, move on. I think that makes you an expert in this field.
Well, to answer your question, thinking about that a little bit, I think that there are things that relate us, and that's what you have to remind yourself. No matter if a student speaks Spanish, German, has one mom or two moms, or has lost someone, there are certain emotions and connections that connect us all together. Everyone knows what it feels like to have lost someone important to you. Everyone knows what it's like to know someone who's gone through a divorce. Everyone knows what it's like to feel the complete rejection of, you know, an ex. You know, most people do. And so I think as teachers, we have to keep that in mind. And really for us as teachers, and it's a little bit of a jump, it's so important that we have our own place to share our accomplishments and our mm-hmm. fears and our challenges. And for me, what's saved, honestly, my life in this teaching, in this field, is my professional learning community. And it's simply just a group of like-minded individuals. There are administrators, part of mine, and other teachers. And they're so important because they connect you not only to your own community, they let you reflect upon it, but they also just offer this incredible support system. And all it just takes is you and one other teacher just having just some similar ideas. And maybe mm-hmm. you're frustrated with the lack of support you have for your school. Maybe you're a social studies teacher with another social studies teachers, and you're freaking out about trying to use Chromebooks for the first time in your classroom, and you have no idea how Google Classrooms work, or Slides, or what the hell are Sheets, and how to do Sites. And so if you can kind of tap into it, all you literally need is, and I've kind of plugged this before, but a great app called Voxer, and it's like the Nextel Chirp where you can communicate that way. And it's amazing because it gives you an opportunity to provide reflection upon your own teaching, but also to put yourself into the shoes of other teachers, administrators, other students. And there are times when I get on, I say, today was like brutal. And like, what'd you guys think about that? You know, and like, am I right here? Offer some perspective.
Yeah, and I think kind of to tie those two things together, your professional learning community, your PLC, really can help when you're in a situation where you're interacting with students from different backgrounds and maybe you don't know how to handle it. Kind of like you said with certain students that you've kind of never been experienced, you didn't have any experience with, reaching out to those other individuals to help you with that, that have had those experiences before, because, you know, why reinvent the wheel when other people have gone through similar experiences? Get their ideas and how they handled certain things, and that way you can move forward and not make maybe the same mistake they did.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah.
And I mean, it also doesn't hurt to have, you know, administration perspective as well. There are times mm-hmm. when I said, hey, here's what I'm experiencing, and this student's messing up, and I want my pound of flesh, you know, type thing. And
right, yep.
my administrator, like, the people in the group are like, whoa, 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 whoa. Let's flip it, reverse it, and right. play that Bring back to yourself. Notch. And it's like, ooh, that's not right at all. So, right. but as I said, though, I can't get behind them enough. I've been lucky enough where I have kept in contact with some people from college, and mm-hmm. They've gone to different districts, and you know, there's one that's similar to Reading. There's others that are suburban and urban as well, and even rural. And it's great because even though we all kind of started from Millersville, as you did,
mm-hmm. yep.
You know, it's great because we can kind of connect all that stuff back to our experiences today. And you kind of have this, as I said, this support system that really just not only supports you, but really challenges you. And so, like, a year ago, people... the huge discussion was, well, where is Zach going with all this? You know, where am I going with my career, and what do I want? And I said, you know, I'm not quite sure what I want to do. I think I want to be an assistant principal, but, you know, I don't know how many of those I've seen that, you know, have really impressed me. And so, right. so what do I do? And,
right.
you know, they kind of provided some suggestions and, you know, materials, and kind of refreshed the inspiration a little bit there.
Right. That's awesome. Well, thank you again for taking the time to talk to us today. I really appreciate it. You have so much to share.
I would actually love
I would love to have you back sometime and really dive into professional learning communities
yes.
and kind of your administrative experiences or your kind of administrative desires, at least, going forward, because I think there's so much there as well. We could go on for hours, I think. Yeah. But anyways, thank you again so much for being here. I really, really appreciate it. And I hope that more educators come out with your passion for valuing every student, no matter what their background is. Creating those relationships, because I think what you're doing for those students is absolutely 100% incredible. And I really truly believe that.
Thank you. Thank you. It's kind of nice to talk about this, you know, because, mm-hmm. you know, as any kind of teacher, there's always a propensity for burnout. And, you know, and
oh, absolutely.
It's almost like a, not to, you know, be too, you know, providing too many stories, but, you know, just kind of like a star, like you got to sometimes hold that back, you know, depending on, you know, the path you're taking
yep.
to make sure that you kind of make it the whole journey. And so for yep. me, it's been a little bit of a process there trying to hold back and, you know, what to put out. So, but thank you though, so much though, for the opportunity to discuss, you know, as I said, it's amazing what you're doing, and it's exciting to hear all the people that you've interviewed so far, and just I really appreciate all the different perspectives that are being offered up. It's not just this, you know, the same role every time. It's different people with different backgrounds. So it's been a great treat to hear all the other guests you've interviewed as well. So thank you for including me on those lists.
Yeah, thank you again, and enjoy your day tomorrow. Have a good day.
All right, thanks, man. All right, I'll see you.